everything. The other thing I didn't do, and I would do if it occurred again, is I would reach out to the board and say, listen, I've been put in this position. Can you give me any guidance? And I didn't do that, and that was my error. And the board, I'm sure, would have provided me guidance if I had asked for it. I didn't, and I can't tell you why I didn't. But upon reflection, if this was to occur again, that's what I would do differently.
Did you consult with a colleague or with a supervisor or somebody to give you guidance?
I did consult with an attorney about how to release the 215, 216 records after I received the court order in late March. And their recommendation, well, before late March, their recommendation, since I had concerns, was that to ask for a court order to release the records. And I think that's what the documentation shows I was waiting for. And then, of course, when I received it, I released the records to the court as I was instructed to. From my own assessment, not the first time, but the second time, I would have consulted the board, like I said, and said, listen, I've gotten this court order. It says I'm supposed to do this. It says I'm then supposed to destroy the records. I'm not really sure what to do. Help me out. And I think part of my naive reason I deferred to the court is I remember at some time in the past, there was an issue about if there was some sense of professional misconduct in a situation like this, the court had to refer it to the board. I don't know if that's even still the case. But I suspect at some point that's part of what was playing out in my mind, that the court was ordering me to do this. So I assumed they had jurisdiction over it. But since I've been through this now and the issue's been raised by the board, I would handle it differently next time.
And Dr. Gill, if I may, on the 2015-2016 records, the way in which that was handled, which was providing that to the court, it was a little more of a roundabout way in satisfying his Title 12 obligation, but it did go to the court and it went to someone who could act as a gatekeeper. So the reality is that also was very much in line with what the judge was tasked with, which is determining what's in the best interest. And so by the court folding in to that best interest analysis, was the disclosure of these records appropriate? I think he, in that intersection of ethics and law, he threaded the needle properly. That's an appropriate way for him to have handled it, which is give it to a judge as a tiebreaker to make that decision. Because let's say that that request had been made and there's a high conflict divorce going on. The other way he could have handled it is to actually file a motion putting the court on notice of that ethical and legal conflict. Essentially, that's what happened. He did it in a little more informal way, but the reality is he did put the judge on notice that he was going to make these records available, and then the judge could essentially do that best interest analysis to determine if it was safe or appropriate for the children's parents to have those records. And as for the destruction of the records, I understand the concern the board has. I would note it was subject to a court record or to a court order. If the board does have an issue with that, I do ask that you look at it a little differently than the cases that I've done before the board, the two mental health boards related to records just not being there. Someone, throwing out records, not maintaining good record protection plans in place. This one has a court order, so I think it falls into a little bit of a different box than the ones where you have a practitioner who just gets a request and says, sorry, I didn't take notes or I didn't keep a file. Finally, as to the question of the timeliness of his report, I would note you saw that 600 out of 900 pages of your upload is the report and the collateral information for that report. This thing was one of the longest TI reports I've ever seen, one of the longest reunification reports I've ever seen in family court or in front of a board. And I think that the complexity of it was part of it. I also think the obstruction by the party, the complainant, didn't help. But I do think that he did make efforts to provide notice to the court. We've shown that through his phone records. And there really was, there's no prejudice here. That's the issue, is there hasn't been prejudice here by the report being delayed. If anything, the report ended up coming out against, in some many ways, against the complainant. So that delay only created a status quo where the father was in no worse position than he was previously. So I think that there's really not an evidence of a prejudice here as well. And that harm to a party does need to be factored in.
Thank you. That's all the questions I have.
Thank you. Dr. Davis-Wilson, do you have any questions?
I do not at this time.
All right. Thank you. Thank you. I don't have any questions. I think it's been well discussed. I appreciate both of you being here today. We are now going to go into deliberations. Deliberations is a time just for the committee members to discuss, not to be interrupted by any other parties. Dr. Gill, since you are the lead, if you'd like to start the deliberations.
Well, as I said, my concerns are about this issue between ethics and the law. And the other issue was the delays in providing a response. I understand that being a therapeutic interventionist, sometimes delays are part of the process. But there's a pattern that took place in 2017 and in 2020. At what point, I wonder, does it cross the boundary lines that are appropriate here? But I don't think that what was discussed at the last committee meeting, I don't think there's evidence of gross negligence. And I don't think that we could really argue for unprofessional conduct. I just think these two areas I'm trying to highlight are of concern to me.
Thank you, Dr. Gill. I would agree. I believe the 2015 issue has been taken care of through the court. The judge decided how to handle those records. And I think the concern about the delay is more or less the issue in regards to the situation. Dr. Davis-Wilson, do you have any comments?
Sorry, it wouldn't let me unmute. No, I agree with the comments that were made by Dr. Gill as well, and just have the concerns with kind of the pattern as well.
All right, thank you. With that, is there a specific, I know Dr. Gill mentioned, and I would agree, I don't think there's gross negligence here. I don't feel as there's necessarily unprofessional conduct as much as a lack of maybe providing the records or the documents timely. I'm looking through the ethics. Dr. Gill, did you have a specific rule or statute you felt was?
Well, I guess my question maybe to the board is whether subset CC applies. You know, previously the committee determined that there was a failure to respond to court orders to release all records. And that, of course, isn't the case now. Records were released, or at least some of them, although others were destroyed as reported. But can we still apply that same standard to this situation where there are concerns about delays in responding to court order? Maybe that's a question other members of the board might comment on.
I think what we're talking about is a lack of timeliness. And I think the doctor mentioned that he now has a process that he's utilizing to record and document requests, who did it, when it goes out. So more or less, he seems to have looked at the areas that he needs improved and has done something to improve it. I don't know if CC would work. I don't know if there's, I'm looking through the, if there's an ethics issue. I don't know, Ms. Galvin, if you had a, I know you're much more experienced in this. I guess what I would ask is, do we feel that, I know there's been situations where it's, you know, there's an issue, it's more of a process issue, time management issue, whatever you want to call it. You know, has he done enough to reconcile it through his new documentation, or do we feel we need to take it to the full board to be reviewed? I guess that's what I would ask. Any thoughts from either committee member?
Well, I think that possibly what might apply here is just the ethical standard regarding documentation.
Okay.
That may apply, and also the standard 1.02 conflict between ethics and law, and I think those are the. Those are the two ethical standards that I think apply here.
Okay, so let me, in regards to documentation, I'm just looking. So that would be, I think, 32-2061-16H, failing to or refusing to maintain or retain adequate business, financial, professional records for pertaining to psychological services provided to the client or patient. Dr. Gill, is that?
Well, that's what I'm thinking. But then again, the question is, does that apply to delays in responding to court orders for documentation? And I'm not sure how to answer that.
Are we asking for guidance from our attorney in how to apply that?
Yes.
I think that you can read into CC an obligation to provide those records in a timely manner.
Okay, if that's the case, then I make a motion that we move this case to the full board, applying CC failure to respond or to respond in a timely manner to court orders to release all records, and and DD, violation of ethical standards 1.02, conflict with ethics in the law.
All right, so that's the motion. Is there a second?
I'll second that.
All right, is there any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion passes. Both parties, just want to let you know you'll be contacted by our board in regards to the process moving forward. So thank you both for both parties for being here today. All right, we're now going to move on to complaint item number 4C, complaint number 2035, Dr. Surette Zachariah. I am the lead. Let me grab my notes here. Thank you. All right, this item has been before the board before. I'm just going to provide a summary to kind of update us, and then also what has occurred since that last meeting. So March 2017 to September 2019, Dr. Zachariah worked for Vibrant Healthcare, located in Scottsdale, Arizona. During her employment at Vibrant, Dr. Zachariah provided services to psychology patients and supervised a psychologist associate, Dr. Wiley. Dr. Wiley worked for Vibrant from October 2017 to 2020, where she provided services to patients under Dr. Zachariah's supervision. Dr. Wiley has a pending psychologist licensure application to the board. Dr. Wiley provided counseling services to RJ 2017 to 2019 and RJ's fiance two sessions in 2019 and also RJ's minor son. In January 2020, RJ submitted one complaint against Dr. Zachariah, Dr. Wiley, and Angelina Fisher, a counselor, a licensed professional counselor for the Arizona Board of Behavioral Health. These complaints have been submitted to us, and also the doctor, in regards to Dr. Fisher, that was forwarded to the Board of Behavior Health. On February 4th, 2020, the board office received information from RJ's fiance regarding similar concerns as JR. During the investigation of this complaint, board staff obtained Dr. Zachariah's employment file from Vibrant, which reflects that her employment was terminated in September 2019 for various reasons, to include but not limited to HIPAA violations. There are some financial accusations and failure to properly supervise Dr. Wiley. Following her departure from Vibrant, Dr. Zachariah opened her own private practice, Lighthouse Psychology. In its April 2015-2020 meeting, the CSC reviewed complaint and voted to table it, asking that a subpoena be provided to Vibrant. In regards to the allegations that were made by RJ, they were really focused more toward Dr. Wiley, and with Dr. Zachariah being her supervisor, regards to Dr. Wiley, that there was a conflict of interest. There was an issue with her wearing and like it would appear to be a doctor's coat with the word doctor on it, as she's not a actual doctor, not licensed yet. Posting sessions information on her Facebook, allegations that she asked her client, RJ, if he was interested in meeting and dating a fellow therapist, and there were some billing concerns. Again, at the CSC meeting where we reviewed this the first time, the committee expressed concerns regarding billing, the adequacy of Dr. Zachariah's supervision, that the clients are not made aware of that Dr. Wiley is being supervised, and the consent forms do not specify Dr. Wiley is being supervised by Dr. Zachariah. Due to these concerns, we then subpoenaed the supervision records. Dr. Zachariah responded to the first CSC meeting and the original complaint, and then has also then provided through her attorney additional responses. In regards to the billing issue, let me just go back on regarding the subpoena. We did ask for subpoenaed information. In regards to the subpoena, no supervision contract between Dr. Wiley and Dr. Zachariah were provided. If it was signed, it appears that though Zachariah would have it. There were emails between Zachariah and Dr. Wiley, which reflect a supervisory role, and the informed consent does state that you can be seen by a psychologist or psychologist intern. So let me just jump back to Dr. Zachariah's response in regards that we received after the last CSC meeting. In regards to the billing, she states that she reached out to several of her colleagues and owners of businesses similar to Vibrant in regards to how to bill for Dr. Wiley's time. And she feels as though maybe she was just given some misinformation on regards to how to appropriately bill for Dr. Wiley. She now knows that it was not appropriate to use her MPI number as an identifier in connection to Dr. Wiley's billing, as reflected in the invoice provided by the complainant. Dr. Zachariah then once realized that this shouldn't occur, told Vibrant Health that its billing and its billing vendor to stop billing under her name and MPI number for services provided by Dr. Wiley. She also sent a letter that was drafted by her attorney for her signature to send to all the insurance companies advising them of the potentially inappropriate billing. These letters were sent via certified mail to various insurance companies. Dr. Zachariah states that she believes she's taken steps to ensure that her employees ensure she employs good billing practice. Now she has completed several continuing education seminars to address billing. In regards to the supervision of Dr. Wiley, Dr. Zachariah said she reached out to colleagues about what type of supervision she needed to give to this person who was getting ready to sit for her licensing exam and had already completed, remember Dr. Wiley had already completed the number of hours for supervision. She was told general supervision was acceptable and record the day such supervision took place. Dr. Zachariah states she met with Dr. Wiley several times each month and recorded these meetings in her calendar under the name Marilyn, which those documents were sent to us. Dr. Zachariah has also taken continuing education courses regarding supervision since this complaint. And that summarizes kind of where we are in regards to this complaint at this point. Is RJ present?
Madam Chair, I believe RJ and JW are present, and they just unmuted their phone, actually.
Yes, we're available. Yes. We're here.
All right. Would you like to make any comments, opening statements?
In regards to, I guess the only statement I really have is I'm just questioning the, I question the supervision. I never knew of Dr. Z, as she was referred to. So that's where a lot of this came from. My concern is, you know, that we're hearing a lot of things now that she was a psychological associate, that Dr. Wiley was a psychological associate. And that's the first that we've heard about that. And the things that were being reported from the first CSC and for the things that are being said now are just really, we're just trying to adjust to them and get an understanding of them, because I don't understand how was she advising somebody if we never knew who she was. So, I mean, there's not really much of a statement beyond that. It's just more of us trying to gather information to get an understanding.
All right. Thank you. I do have a question, and you have to forgive me. I'm scrolling through my documents, and again, we have pages and pages of documents. Oops, and I just pushed the wrong button here. There was a form, a consent form. It's called an information form that stated on the form that services would be provided by a psychologist or a psychologist intern. Do you remember signing a form like that?
No, ma'am. I actually went back through my records, and I remember I had a form that was emailed to me, and I did not see anything about a psychologist intern. No, ma'am.
Okay. And just to reiterate, at any time, did you meet Dr. Zachariah?
No, ma'am. No.
And did you, and Dr. Wiley, during your meetings with her, did she ever explain that she was working under supervision?
No, ma'am.
All right. Okay. And that's all the questions I have for RJ. Do the other committee members have a questions?
RJ, you were saying that you never met with the supervisor. Is that correct?
Yes, sir, that is correct. I have never, to this day, have never met nor spoken to doctors.
And you may not know this, but in psychotherapy, it's not required that a patient meet with the supervisor. It's only required that the person that's treating you is under supervision. But that's something you did not understand. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. Thank you for being here. That's all I have.
Yes, sir.
Dr. Davis-Wilson, do you have any questions?
I do not.
All right. I'd ask your, I believe your fiance is also here. Is that correct?
Yes.
All right. And your initials?
JW.
JW. Thank you. I'm going to ask you this, just the same question. Do you remember signing any documents in regards that state that you will be seen by a psychologist or a psychologist intern?
No.
All right. And also, do you recall being told that by Dr. Wiley or anyone else there that Dr. Wiley was under supervision?
No, she never said that she was under supervision.
What was your understanding when you talked to Dr. Wiley? What did you feel her title or her position was?
I thought that she was a clinical psychologist.
Okay. All right. Do any of my fellow committee members have any questions for JW?
I don't.
All right. Thank you. Thank you both for being here today. We do appreciate it. I'm now going to, I'd like to ask Dr. Zachariah, and I believe you're represented by counsel. Is that correct? You're on mute. Can we unmute them?
Yes, I just prompted. Thank you. I think they're unmuted now.
All right. I'd like to thank both of you for being here today. If you could both introduce yourselves for the record.
My name is John Auger, and I am I represent Dr. Saret Zachariah.
Great.
And I'm Saret Zachariah.
Oh, thank you. How do you pronounce your last name?
Zachariah.
Zazaria.
Why they call me Dr. Z.
Dr. Z. I'm going to call you Dr. Z probably. All right. Dr. Zaria. Sorry.
They call me Sarah as well.
I do apologize if I mispronounced your name. Would you like to make any opening statements or comments?
I would. Thank you, Dr. Shreve. I think that your summary of this was complete and accurate, with the exception of one thing, and I'll get to that in a second. It's a minor issue. I believe what we wanted to focus on today was what the committee was concerned about during the last meeting, and those are the issues of supervision and billing. I'd like to begin with the issue of supervision, but note that everything that we are here about today essentially is the product of out-of-office conduct by Dr. Wiley. There are no complaints about anything that Dr. Wiley did in connection with her care of the complainants directly in the office, where Dr. Z had the ability to at least look after the behavior of Dr. Wiley. The consent form that you received, that you've been referring to, was sent by Vibrant in response to the subpoena, and it does make clear that the patients can be seen by interns. We don't have access to those records, and so, but you know, I'm certain that Vibrant does. And if Vibrant has the records for these patients, I am fairly confident that if they were exercising the normal practices that they go through with new patients, that they would have been consented, and this consent form would be in there acknowledging that. I understand that when a patient signs a consent form, and I do it all the time, you don't read the fine print, and there is, it's a long form, it's a page long, and there's a lot of information in there. You just want to get treated, and you may not read all the way through the form, but that is what the form says. And Dr. Z will tell you that Dr. Wiley was instructed at the beginning of her sessions to inform the patients that she was an intern, in fact, and that she was not licensed. We've addressed the issue of the lab coat and demonstrated, and I think Dr. Wiley even admitted the last time that she was before the board that she never wore that coat while she was in the clinic. Those were all selfies that she took outside of the clinic with coats that were made by her and not by Vibrant. And so Dr. Zachariah really had no reason to believe that Dr. Wiley was doing anything other than representing herself in the way that she expected her to as an intern, or as a, you know, a post-intern, really, in this case, of somebody who had more than the hours necessary to apply for licensure. Regarding the actual supervision itself, the board had received my email saying that there were no records documenting the supervision itself, but after that, Dr. Z did go back, and I produced it in my supplement, and Dr. Shreve, you referred to it, was the calendars that she kept. And it shows all of the patients that were essentially involved in the practice. And you can see very clearly, it's even written in red most of the times. A lot of this stuff is color-coded. And Dr. Z will tell you that, you know, you can look and see Dr. Wiley's name there, Marilyn, every time that she has a meeting with her. And those meetings were occurring just about every week. So I'd like to point out that the complainants here, they've already told you here today that they're not concerned about the care that Dr. Wiley provided in clinic. They were just concerned that they felt once this sort of tawdry out-of-clinic affair issue arose, that in the course of their investigation, it wasn't as clear to them as they would have liked it to be that Dr. Z was supervising Dr. Wiley. But they don't complain that and there is no evidence, much less clear and convincing evidence, that any kind of additional supervision or additional evidence of supervision would have made any difference in the care they received, nor is there any evidence that the care, the actual care, in-clinic care that Dr. Wiley provided was inappropriate and was care that Dr. Z somehow should have counseled Dr. Wiley against. The one inaccuracy Dr. Shriba wanted to point out was that while Dr. Z has taken some CLEs in billing practices since this issue was brought to her attention, she has not taken any CLEs directly related to supervision, although we have included evidence that she has over the course of her practice and recently in 2017 and 2018, taking continuing education. I'm sorry, I'm saying CLE, I meant just continuing education courses that are directly related to supervision. She really feels like she's up to speed on supervisory issues. Nonetheless, she wants the board to know that in the practice that she has now following the separation from Vibrant Health, that this is an issue that is front and center for her, that she is taking the appropriate measures to make sure that the interns that are under her supervision now are properly supervised, and that supervision is documented in a way that can be produced a little bit more easily than in a form of a calendar where direct supervision is required. Addressing the issue of billing, again, there is no evidence that the billing itself was improper here. It was an administrative issue that was in large part related to a third-party billing agent that was responsible for doing the billing that was largely directed by the primary owner of Vibrant Health. Dr. Z acknowledges that she has a responsibility to ensure that the billing practices of the folks that she supervises and of herself are appropriate. And she takes full responsibility for any administrative issues that went on with that. But as you have seen from the record, when it became clear to her that this might be an issue, she took action right away. She had another lawyer that prepared a letter for her that she sent out to 26 different healthcare insurance companies, including Medicare, to make sure that they were aware of what was going on and to ask them if they had felt the billing was in any way inappropriate to please audit their records and please get in touch with Vibrant Health. Vibrant Health previously responded to a subpoena regarding issues in this case, and while it may have some complaints of its own about Dr. Z's billing practices, I can't tell from the records that it provided that those were that the bills themselves were inappropriate, other than that one administrative issue. And I'd note that if Vibrant feels so strongly about that, they certainly haven't taken any action to with any enforcement agency at all, much less the health insurance providers themselves, to bring this to their attention. So I question, you know, whether this is more a function of this sort of interpersonal blow up that occurred a while ago that led to the separation of Dr. Z and the current civil litigation that's involving the ownership of the company than it is a true belief in the fact that there was inappropriate billing. Nonetheless, Dr. Z does acknowledge that these billing statements should have been done differently. And she has, since this occurred and since she has taken steps to correct the situation with the insurers, and I might add, not a single insurer has come back and said they felt the billing was inappropriate or they felt the practice that she employed was inappropriate, including Medicare, which said they were going to investigate and now 6 months later hasn't come forward with any suggestion that they felt that anything that she did was inappropriate. But she has taken billing courses, and Dr. Z will assure you that in connection with her new practice, that there are no administrative issues. She's more hands-on. She understands the issues that were brought before the board as a result of this out-of-office conduct by Dr. Wiley, and she wants the board to know that that the board should not have any concerns, nor should the public, about the billing practices that are employed right now. And so, you know, in closing here, I think, you know, if the board is concerned about protection of the public, to the extent it had any concerns about supervision or billing, Dr. Z has taken steps to make sure that those concerns are allayed. To the extent that there is really any evidence of unprofessionalism in connection with the billing or the supervision, I would respectfully submit that there is not clear and convincing evidence of that, although there is some evidence that things could have been done better. And that's my conclusion here, and I'll allow you to, or Dr. Zhu would be happy to answer any questions that you would like to ask. And I would too.
And Madam Chair, before we proceed with questions, I just wanted to provide one point of clarification. You had inquired about the complainant and JW if they signed informed consents, which indicated that they may be seeing a psychology intern. As the committee is aware, I subpoenaed both RJ and JW's records from the agency. I reviewed the file right now, and they both signed an informed consent for psychology treatment form, indicating that they will be seen by a psychologist or psychology intern. For the committee's reference, JW's signed form is page 200, and RJ's is 243. I just wanted to clarify that for the committee.
Thank you. That's what I was looking for, too, so I appreciate that. All right. Well, thank you very much. I will go ahead and start with the questions. Doctor, what have you learned from this process?
How long do you have? I have learned that in reflecting back my naivety in going into business with a business major, not knowing enough about healthcare, really did not benefit me. I have learned that I need to be so much more involved in billing. I have to tell you, I know so much more about billing now than I even thought was possible. I have weekly communication with my biller, and it starts off like this. Have I done anything wrong? Is there anything that needs to be changed? Is everything on the up and up? Is everything as clear as it can be to the insurance companies? Are there no questions? And she usually chuckles and said, the answer is still no. And then we go on to speak about the EOBs that have come, what they mean. A lot of our discussion recently has been over telehealth and the coding and how it's different for each insurance company and why they require the information that they require. As far as it goes, the patients in my clinic right now actually do not even receive an invoice at the end of service. And they have informed consent verbally. We speak about that. They know that they will receive what they are receiving from the insurance company. And when it comes to any questions and there is communication with the actual insurance companies, I make sure I'm on there with the patients when there's a question. So I hear and I learn. And I also make sure that I'm on there with my biller so that I see and I learn so that I can be much more involved, much more available, and much more knowledgeable in what is required in billing. I make sure to keep up with all the new CPT codes. I make sure that documentation meets every single guideline of Medicare when it comes for billing, which includes the timing, which includes units, which includes the diagnoses matching up. Now that I'm doing telebehavioral health, I use UpDocs. It comes with a click at the end of each session with the picture of the patient for verification that they are truly here and in Arizona, as well as a timestamp that matches the timestamp that is on my actual notes. So I've learned a lot, and I'm sure there's a lot more, but, you know, I could keep going.
Yeah. Could you, so billing was one issue that in it, the other one was the supervision and doctor, when that's a complaint was filed against Dr. Wiley, the committee is focused on separately, but there were concerns about some of her activities in regards to the client. So how would you, and yes, some of it was outside work activity or whatnot, but the reality is she's still working under your supervision. So how do you address that now, and what would you have done differently? And when we did get the records of your meetings. Could you talk about a little bit how you format those meetings when you talk to your person you're supervising?
Yes, I can. The interns that I have now are under direct supervision. So that looks different to how I was previously informed general supervision looked. So the one thing that has happened in all our meetings is we have had major conversations about social media, conversations about professionalism out there, conversations about not putting out there information about yourself that would not be considered professional and decent. It's been around conversations of we don't befriend our patients on social media at all. Our social media needs to be on privacy setting so that no one has access to it. So this has been a major conversation. In fact, in my telebehavioral health and in my general informed consent forms, in both of those, it states clearly, I will not search you out on social media. I will not befriend you on social media. And I make sure very much to point that out to each patient verbally, multiple times, and I make sure that the interns who are underneath me say that. I have also created a telehealth behavioral addendum checklist, since most of our work right now is being done via video chat. And the very first thing is informed consent, where the intern says, I have let patient know that I am working under Dr. Z.
When you were supervising Dr. Wiley, was that the first time you supervised an individual?
It was the first time I had done general supervision.
General supervision means she's not getting required hours.
Exactly. And from what I was shared with three colleagues, and I mean, I realize that maybe not everyone is up to speed on the information they should have. I was told that what was important was that I record the dates that I met with her, that there wasn't really any need to have increased documentation. How that looks differently in direct supervision, and even so much more now, is I have a running record of each time I meet with my interns and a little blurb about what we spoke about. In order to have a checks and balance, I have them at the end of the month actually submit to me their running record as well, which along also has their competencies that they've chosen for that week. And I make sure that, you know, everything's a match and we're on the same page. I also have them submit their running group supervision with me to make sure that, yes, they were there that time right. That they're saying they're there.
Focusing on Dr. Wiley, when you were supervising Dr. Wiley, I mean, what were those conversations then? I mean, in regards to, were they just very broad? Were you talking about the patients? There were some very concerning accusations regarding that. So I'm trying to understand what your role as a supervisor regards to Dr. Wiley was.
Start off, do you have any concerns with any of the patients that you see? There were multiple times where there were concerns that were raised and we discussed them and spoke about best practices on how to work with them. There were even times when she said to me, I would really appreciate it if you would be in session with me, because I'm having, you know, some struggles with this, and then I would join her in session. And I did not meet all the patients, but I did meet quite a few.
There was some concern raised about you downloading or accessing patient files once you left the organization. Could you address that?
I did not download. I did not download any files once I'd left the organization. Did I go into files to look? Yes, as a supervisor, I did, to check, you know, how things were going. But I did not download any records in my new practice. I do not have a single patient who was at Vibrant Healthcare. They are all brand new patients.
All right. Other committee members, do you have any questions for the doctor? Dr. Gill, I think you're on mute.
Yes. I guess there's some added documentation that was included in the record. In this new documentation where there was a statement of informed consent, it sounded as if it was informed consent in which you would be treated by a therapist or by a therapist intern. But was it specified in your consent agreement with Dr. Wiley's patient that it was documented in the informed consent form that they were being treated by an intern?
You know, I cannot answer that. I don't have the form in front of me. I do know that other than what was written in the form, that it definitely states that it was, you know, that it could be either or. I do know that the office manager was also informed to tell patients even before they came in and when they were there. Dr. Wiley's cards were out there, and they did not say clinical psychologists on them, her business cards that were also given to the patient. And I had instructed Dr. Wiley to mention that to all patients. And the patients that I had met with knew that she was working under my supervision. So I can only speak to the ones that I had met with. I also believe that the last hearing, it was also stated that it was known that she was working under my supervision by one of the people who had been speaking in, and I actually don't remember who it was. So we had set up everything to allow for that to be well known, and with verbal informed consent, it should have happened within the session. One of the changes I've made is that documentation of verbal informed consent needs to be included in documentation.
Right. And it's no doubt your responsibility to review that documentation. Okay. I guess I think your attorney had mentioned something about there was a documentation regarding supervision sessions. The documentation that I had access to that I reviewed indicated that your supervision sessions were indicated under a calendar in which it had Dr. Wiley's name, but that there weren't any documented notes about your supervision sessions. Do I have that correct? Is that a yes?
You answer,
yes, affirmative.
Thank you.
Yes. And so I guess then I'm a little surprised that you would not document, you know, your visits with Dr. Wiley. And I'm particularly concerned because of the nature of the therapy. She was providing services for AR. She was providing services for AR's fiance, at least for two sessions. Those two sessions apparently were not billed. Also sessions with the ex-wife of AR, and also the ex-wife and her partner. And she was also providing services to AR's son. Now, this is all possible for a therapist to conduct these kinds of therapies with multiple therapy members, but there was no indication of documentation regarding informed consent as to who the patient is, what your priorities are, were in treatment. I mean, this is a lot of work for a licensed therapist to conduct, multiple family members. It sounds to me, my initial impression, and I'd like your response, it sounds absolutely chaotic. How can an intern be providing all these kinds of services with multiple family members and get it right? and then not have a clear statement of how to proceed through an informed consent agreement.
I have nothing to argue with you.
I can't hear you.
We can't hear you.
Yeah, can you hear me now?
Yes, thank you.
Okay, I'm not going to argue with you. I agree with you. Now, the very fact that they weren't billed would more than likely mean I didn't even see the documentation. And this is not an issue that she brought up in supervision.
You didn't know that she was seeing multiple family members, including the fiance, the ex-wife, the ex-wife and partner, and AR's children? You didn't know this?
No, I knew that she was seeing the, is it JR or RJ?
AR.
I think it's RJ. I knew she was seeing him and her son. That is all that I knew she was seeing in that. And I did ask, how is that going? And she said, it seems to be going very well. There's no concerns there. I did not know that she was seeing all of these people of that.
Weren't you reviewing her documentation?
If she didn't sign it, if it wasn't billed, then I didn't see the documentation. I don't even know.
But it was billed for RJ for the other family members. It just wasn't billed for the fiancé.
Right, but I did not know they were all connected because they don't all have the same names. So I only knew about RJ and his son. I did not know she had started seeing his...
I guess my question is, should you have known?
Yes. In hindsight, I should have known. I should have known that, even though the names were not the same. Mm-hmm.
Okay, Madam Chair, thank you very much. That's all the questions I have.
Thank you. I do have a follow-up question. Do you have a contract between you and Dr. Wiley? During the subpoena, they said they did not have a contract and that you must have, if there was one signed, and I don't recall you providing a contract.
And all the documentation that I had is at Vibrant Healthcare. There was a file under the Dropbox with my name on it that contract would have been found in there. The principle of how Vibrant Healthcare was started by the CEO was that we were going to be doing everything via the Japanese method, which did not have contracts. But I do remember sitting down with her and discussing what supervision would look like. And I'm pretty sure I recollect that we did sign a contract. But I do not have that within my personal records. And I do not have access to anything at Vibrant Healthcare at this point.
So the philosophy of the company was no contracts between a supervisor and an intern?
Between everyone, between employees, between everyone. It was just a letter of welcome on board.
As a psychologist, when you're taking an intern under your license,
no,
right?
It was. I said the signed one would be in the inbox at Vibrant Healthcare. I don't have a copy of it.
And they, neither do they, and I believe they're released a comment or something that you would have had. They don't have it. So it's not in there. So, okay, that's all right. I don't have any other further questions. Dr. Davis-Wilson, do you have any questions?
I do. And mine's going to kind of piggyback on the supervision contract, but also something that Dr. Gill stated as far as documentation of supervision. It appears that the only documentation is just the individual's name on the calendar. When you're meeting with supervisees now, so now you said that there's specific supervision that you're providing, specific topics that you are covering. How have you changed your documentation requirements for supervision?
I have made them more thorough. I have also insisted that the company I'm with is not the only one that keeps records. I actually have a set of records of my own. So if, God forbid, I should ever find myself separated from a company, I have all the information this time, and I'm not relying on the honesty of someone else to provide that information. So I have my whole setting, and again, with my individual supervision, I have blurbs about what we discussed, you know, and then I have them send in their monthly version, so I see what they understood we discussed as well. And it's also, I see their competency that they chose for the week, and I make sure we're on the same page.
Perfect.
I think what's happened with this whole situation, it's really made me reflect on best practices for everyone all around.
Excellent. And one other question that I had, there was a letter that was written by Dr. Wiley to Vibrant Health, or possibly an email, with concerns that you were not attending the supervision meetings, or they weren't getting scheduled on a regular basis, that they weren't occurring as frequently as agreed upon in the beginning. Can you speak to that specific circumstance, and as to why, from your perception, you would think that Dr. Wiley felt that supervision was not occurring?
I have two responses to that. My first one is the separation between myself and Vibrant Healthcare is not a healthy, happy separation. And it has been brought to my attention, again, hearsay, that a lot of comments and threats have been made and accusations which are not accurate and do not have any evidence behind them. And I do know that she was told she was no longer allowed to speak to me, despite my reaching out to her multiple times because I had to terminate supervision. I was no longer at the company, and I did not want her seeing anybody without there being a licensed psychologist. And I have a colleague who was part of those meetings who shared with me the threats and the accusations. And I think it was a collaboration in sorts to try and build up everything. I believe